Hey, everybody. On this episode of the podcast, I sat down with Steve Farrell. Steve is an interesting guy. He reached out to me. He's doing really interesting work. He created an organization, a not-for-profit organization called Humanities Team with another really interesting guy, a very well-known author named Neil Donald Walsh, probably in the early 90s, or maybe mid-90s. He wrote a book called Conversations with God, which was a very popular book. It was a book I read, which I very much enjoyed. And together, their kind of purpose is to really bring these ideas of consciousness, of awareness, of kind of harmony and love out into the public. Steve also recently wrote a book called A New Universal Dream. And so it was really a pleasure to sit down with him and have him share a bit about his story, kind of his, as he described, his awakening moment and changes in his lives that he, in his life that he made, and really what's inspiring and what's allowing him to create this work. He started a big online platform about really bringing these ideas of consciousness and also connecting with really interesting people, quite well-known people in this field of spirituality and science and divinity, as he calls it. So I think he's really doing fascinating work, and I hope you enjoyed this conversation with him. Also, if you are interested in working with plants and working with myself, my colleague Marav Artsy and myself, probably when this comes out, we will have finished our plant medicine retreat, our plant medicine dieta here in the Sacred Valley of Peru. But we have two more dietas or plant medicine retreats coming up. One is scheduled for May in Portugal, and the other is August in Ontario, Canada. So if you're interested in working with plants and working with plant medicine and exploring that, if you've already worked with plants and you're interested in going deeper, or if it's your first time and you're interested in just exploring all that plants have to offer as medicine, as a healing tool, as a teacher, really working in this traditional system of doing a dieta, of going into isolation, of fasting, and working with one specific plant, in general trees that we work with, through the medium of tobacco. These are really wonderful opportunities to do that. Predominantly, as many of you know, we're working via the medium of tobacco, but really connecting with trees. And most of the trees we're working with are Amazonian trees in the tradition we were trained in. But more and more, we've been really inspired to begin working with both North American and European trees, especially kind of in the base of this Celtic system. So more and more we're beginning to work with these trees like olive, oak, hawthorn, elder, alder. And every year we hope to diet more of these trees ourselves so we can begin to connect deeper with them. So some of the trees hopefully that in the future we'll begin working with are things like hazel, willow, aspen, poplar, birch, and really just a whole range, a whole pantheon of trees, but very much inspired by this, the Celtic tradition. So if you'd like more info on that, if you find that interesting or you'd like to learn more, you can check out my website at nicotianarustica.org and also Marav's site at tobaccodiets.com, and I will put a link to both of those in the show notes. As always, if you're able to support this podcast, that's a really big help to me. Patreon is a really good option. It's a website you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. There's different tiers you can sign up for. Those tiers give you different things back, things like early access to shows, bonus material, Q&As. It's a really big help to me. So if you feel like you're gaining something from this podcast, that's a really beautiful way to give back, to practice reciprocity. To all of the patrons, to all the people supporting via Patreon, as always, thank you very much for your support. It really means a lot. And if you're able to do that, thank you very much in advance. If you're not able to do that, as always, doing some of the really small things to help with the algorithms to get this show out to a bigger audience are really useful. So if you're viewing this on YouTube or Rumble, hitting the subscribe button, turning on the notification bell, liking the video, leaving any questions or comments in the comments section, those things all really help. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leaving a star rating and a short review is a really big help. So I think that's it. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Steve Farrell. Running out from the maze, running out from the maze, running out of the maze today.
out from the maze. I'm running out from the maze. I'm running out from the maze today. I'm running out from the maze. Running out from the maze. Run out of the maze today.
Yeah, great, Steve. Well, thank you for coming on. We were chatting a little before we started, but an assistant or a publicist of yours reached out, and it's interesting because usually I don't take a lot of guests that I'm not familiar with. But I looked at a bit of your work, and you seem like a really fascinating guy, and I really kind of resonated with what you were speaking about and what you were doing. So maybe just to start, because I imagine maybe some people are familiar with you, but I would imagine certainly there's some people who aren't. So maybe you could just speak to the audience a bit about your background, who you are, and what brought you to do the work that you do.
Yeah, great. So I'll do that. Also, Jason, the book which you referenced, The New Universal Dream, just so you know, so that is the true story of kind of the 50-year journey from age 12 all the way out to today. And this whole, you know, conscious living thing is really what the story's about, of somebody growing, you know, into conscious living from just the standard average household that we all grew up in. So just to mention that, because that, if anywhere in here, if you want a context around it, that there's a lot of context there.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so can you maybe just give a little bit about your background and you know, kind of growing up, as you said, in an ordinary household, and then what brought you to maybe even that interest in consciousness? It's a word I think that a lot of people are familiar with now. It's becoming more part of our vocabulary, but you know, I think also for a lot of people, it has a lot of different meanings as well.
It does. Yeah. So, you know, the way I look at it, this background of mine is this whole, what's going on now in today's world is this, what I call this great migration to conscious living. So just as we see the Canadian geese, you know, all flying south still, and the whales, where you get out to the coast, all migrating down to the Baja Peninsula and things. Likewise, not covered by the media so much, but this great migration to conscious living is going on. We are all, the 8 billion people on the earth are migrating to this whole new way of living on the earth. And you know, the mystics talked about what this thing that we on humanities team called conscious living so many years ago, back Hippocrates and Plato, you know, in 400 BCE, were sharing there's one consciousness, you know, that we're all a part of this one consciousness. And now science is catching up. And there are articles, even just in the last couple of weeks, Popular Mechanics and other magazines are bringing in the science of consciousness, saying, oh my God, that our own consciousness is actually linked to the consciousness of the entire universe, that everything is interrelated, interconnected, and interdependent. And so my story is actually this story of, I'm going to say, that might be quite like the story of all of your viewers, where we grew up, you know, I grew up with a single mom, a divorced mom, six brothers and sisters, a little 1200 square foot home. And I paid for my braces when I was 12 years old, all of us with my sibling, we paid our way through college. And then I move out to California right out of college, and grabbed a couple of jobs. And then I decided to go out on my own and start a company. And I was just kind of in the right place at the right time, as the internet was being born there in the early 90s. And I started two companies in the digital communications area that both really went to the moon, because the internet. We were on the back of the internet. We were providing digital communications to large companies, first on the East Coast, and then later on the West Coast, and then later on the East Coast. And so we grew from two guys, used furniture, you know, very small, very inexpensive executive suite, to two. Both companies grew to 75 million in revenue, one in 10 years, the other one in 2 years. But during this whole American dream thing that I was living, I had my awakening experience to what this conscious living thing is. And even though I was invited into this whole world of wealth with the private jets and all of that kind of thing, I experienced a good deal of cognitive dissonance. Where on the one hand I was pretty blown away by that whole that whole wealth thing. But the larger part of me, which was the cognitive dissonance, was, is this really why you were born onto this planet? Is this what you're to do? Is this the life that you're to live? With everything going on in the world, is this where you're to spend time? And conscious living is about surrendering, to that flow of life or to the divine, as we use the term in humanities team. Our scientist friends use the term cosmos and universe, It's the same thing, but surrendering to that flow of life. And in so doing, I lost my passion for business. I sold these organizations. I left that whole center of wealth there in Silicon Valley. I moved my family to Boulder, Colorado, where I've been now for 17 years. And I launched Humanities Team, a 501c3 nonprofit with Neil Donald Walsh, who's the author of the Conversations with God books. And Humanities Team, which is now 20 years old, going on 21 years, is about what we used to call awakening to oneness, which is part of what conscious living is. Is this whole, there's this universal consciousness that animates all of life, is one way of saying this. There are other ways to say it, but where what this means is there's one presence throughout the entire universe, and we're all offspring or emanations of that one, right? And it's an entirely different way of living our life when we understand this diversity and unity, this oneness, this divinity, this divine presence. When we understand it and live into it, we live an entirely different life. And so, coming back to your question, the interesting thing is, I think when we grow up and we leave college, in a sense, we're all on a journey, on a journey of an adventure and a journey even of treasure, And every generation, that journey changes a little bit. It used to be to the old American dream, of just financial wealth and all these things. But what I found during my journey was that where you come into that wealth, you just want more, and then you keep wanting more. So it's kind of a mirage. And you prioritize that wanting more over the important relationships in your life. And so I could see that during my journey, that this was not to be my destination, that this was a part of my journey to understand it and see it with both eyes, experience it. But it was to seek out that fulfilling, joyful way of living that is what I think today's journey is about. Where, because I think your viewers, when we talk about living into our interior states, our internal universe, that's conscious living. That's where we're opening to the divine, to the one, to where we see that we're a part of the earth, we're a part of each other. It's not just metaphor. We're actually a part of each other. And so this is where my journey took me, of this deepening into this conscious living, this oneness, this diversity and unity, this divinity. And there's no end zone. There's no there. It's a deepening exercise where your life is just continuing to unfold into deeper and deeper states of this elevated consciousness. And so that's what this nonprofit that Neil Donald Walsh and I founded, that's what we're about. And we're an educational nonprofit, and We've created a streaming platform where we're translating into 75 languages, and science-based programs, spiritual programs, embodied practices. Our whole organization is about just educating, on conscious living.
Yeah, wonderful. So what does that mean to you? 'Cause you use that phrase a few times, conscious living. What differentiates that from someone just living their day-to-day lives and going to work, taking care of their kids, eating, exercising? What would you differentiate kind of a, I guess maybe as you could call it, a somewhat unconscious life, maybe where people aren't bringing awareness to certain aspects of their lives. But what does that mean for you when you're specifically talking about living a conscious life?
Yeah, well, so what I'm referring to, and let me just stay in my own experience because maybe people can relate to that. But growing up, I had no awareness of conscious living. This whole diversity and unity, this one consciousness that animates all of life. I was not taught any of this. It was more Newtonian, Darwinian science. We're all separate. I'm separate from you. We're separate from other people. We're separate from the earth. That the divine, if there is one, is up in the sky somewhere. I grew up this way. In fact, I was an altar boy in the Catholic Church, and but as we if we do the homework, where we do the research, where we educate ourselves, we can see. And again, even in Popular Mechanics, a magazine article that just came out last week, their articles are proliferating everywhere that are sharing that old science is really not true. It's a false reality. It's where we're living in our separated self. It's where we wake up in the morning and our whole worldview is of me. I want to do this, I want to do that. It's all me, I based. It's our smaller self. As we and it's just to stay with that for a bit. It can This sense of there's a strong sense of separation, which then brings in a sense of loneliness often, which then brings in a sense of anxiety in today's world with wars and extreme weather and all these things. It's not a fulfilling place to live at all in this separated self place from the time we wake up on the pillow to the end of the night. It's a very transactional world. We're separate from each other, and why not? And why not even just go and try and earn $1 billion as many do, right? Where you're just prioritizing more. It's all financial gain that is being prioritized over deeper relationships where we leave transactional, where we go to women and a lot of men even these days talk about relational relationships, right? Where we're more deeply connected. Well, conscious living is where we go over one more. Into divine presence. It would never be transactional of I need the, well, I want this. If you do this, I'll do this for you, right? It's just tit for tat. It's transactional. There's no love. There's no open hearted. It's very unfulfilling. You can go, into many classrooms and most hospitals, and it's very transactional today because it's an unconscious world. Now, as we become conscious of this whole oneness thing, this diversity and unity thing, this loving presence, this one consciousness, which is pure love, when you really do the research and when you build your daily practice, where you start living into this oneness. Right now, there's right out my window, there's nature, where you're living into that connection with nature, into that light of divine love. Which is can become a part of our daily practice, where we're deeply understanding that I'm an em my parents delivered me to the earth. They're like an airplane terminal. They delivered me here, but I did not come from my parents, nor did you, nor did any of your viewers. We came from the one, from the Most High, with whatever word term we want to use. I like to use the term the divine. We came from the divine. We're emanations of the divine. We actually have unlimited eternal lives. everlasting lives. We have unlimited potential. We have that same, those same capacities of the one. And again, there's all kinds of education everywhere. I'm sure your viewers, they've read books, they've seen movies, they've taken classes, probably they've gone to seminars, they've experienced retreats. This is now out there. Not so much true when we started Humanities Team over 20 years ago, but today there's this awareness. As we come into this awareness and understand what this oneness, this pure love thing is, and as we start building a daily practice around it, we experience then what I believe this generation's treasure is becoming. It's not the old American dream, because I'm not the only one that have experienced it and found it very unfulfilling, very hollow. I'm sure you've heard that many times. But there is a dream we can live into. I wrote this book about it called A New Universal Dream. And we can live into that dream, into that pure love, into that oneness, into that the light of the divine that shines on us all day, every day. So that's conscious living, and that's the contrast that I would draw.
It's interesting. You started Humanities Team with Neil Donald Walsh, and I'm sure some of the viewers have heard of him. I mean, was it maybe back in the late 90s or 2000s? He wrote a book called Conversations with God, which was a very popular book. Are you familiar with kind of his process? I mean, from what I remember, I think he said that book was kind of channeled, like it was something that came to him. He wasn't necessarily very religious, but it was, and I think it was quite surprising to him in a way that he just all of a sudden started receiving this information from, as he put it, God. Is that something you've spoken with him about?
Absolutely. I've known Neil now for gosh, 25 years, and I work closely with Neil today, and have for the larger part of 25 years. So, yes, in fact, he and I created a masterclass just in the last 9 months, called The Art and Science of Living Consciously, and we even let people name their own price, including zero, to go through it, where you go through for free. Because all of that wisdom and conversations with God and other wisdom, science-based wisdom, that's been sharing again back to over time, over millennia, that there's one consciousness. It's a consciousness of pure love. And all of this wisdom from conversations with God. There's no right or wrong, right? There's no. No, there are no villains or victims. Some really startling truths come through in conversations with God. So yes, I know Neil well and have created a good deal of education programs, including this recent one, which is an amazing 16 module masterclass that people can go through for free.
You mentioned a bit kind of this idea that science in a way is beginning to show a different picture. Where do you see some of that new science in relation to consciousness and maybe how it's relating to these ideas of consciousness, of religion, of God, of union, of divinity? Do you see parallels that are becoming more kind of accepted now to a larger audience?
I do. So if you go and study Einstein's latter years, there are a good number of quotes here that over 100 years ago in 1921, Einstein, one of his quotes, you can Google this, is the greatest illusion in the whole world is the illusion of separation, he says. And then the other quote that many people are familiar with, where he goes quite a bit deeper and he says that we suffer from, he calls it an optical delusion, where we're clearly separate from each other. And he says this optical delusion has created a prison for us, is what he calls it. And so our job must be to free ourselves from this prison, from this optical delusion, and embrace the whole of humanity and nature. And then his other quote, which is very much what we're getting to here now, where he says that no problem can be solved at the level of consciousness that created it. So what that means, because you can have to kind of sit with that one to try and get your head around it, but what that means is, so we were referencing in today's world, we're all way too familiar with the wars, Middle East and Ukraine and global warming and extreme weather and these various polarity and, not just in the US, but all over the world. So what this is saying is if we want to go to root cause, if we want to heal these things and create a sustainable and flourishing world, that we've actually got to elevate consciousness. We can't stay in this consciousness that he called of separation, of optical delusion, this prison for us. We have to go up. We have to elevate our consciousness. This is what Humanity's Team, the nonprofit that I'm part of, is devoted to, is bringing in the scientists. So you were saying what scientists today? I was mentioning Popular Mechanics. You can go Google that article. There are lots of articles now on this one consciousness that is universal. But Greg Braden's work, Nassim Harriman's work, who runs the Resonance Science Foundation, and his theory of everything, which gets to this oneness of the whole universe. Greg Braden and Nassim Harriman, incidentally, they created a masterclass that is streamed on our platform called Humanity Stream Plus, and it's called Forbidden Science. And they were the ones that insisted we name it Forbidden Science. So when we created this masterclass with them, we said, "Why are we calling this program Forbidden Science?" And they said, "Because this science, which is bringing in quantum physics and the interconnection of everything in the universe, you can't teach this in the classroom today." And we said, "You can't?" They said, "That's right. You cannot teach that. They will not let you teach this quantum physics, this science, in the classroom in the United States today." So that's why we're going to call the masterclass Forbidden Science. And then they bring in all this science of interconnection. And they're scientists, mind you, and yet they talk like preachers, because you'll hear Nassim Harriman with his Resonance Science Foundation in this masterclass. He says, "So," and he's talking to the camera, he says, "So, all of you, everybody watching this program, you should be walking around like with perfect posture, because you need to realize that the universe is inseparable from you." Which is to say, you can't just sort of exit my body, Steve Farrell, and pull me out of everything, and the universe remains the same. It is not the same. There's no universe without Steve Farrell. There's no universe without Jason. There's no universe without each person that is viewing here. So he's saying you should, with good posture, with good feeling empowered, and with a sense of larger self, you should be walking around in the world with that awareness, with that knowledge, because it's very empowering to know that it's true. There is no universe without you. Now, of course, this is the very same message that a Neil Donald Walsh or Michael Beckwith would deliver as a spiritual message, but instead of universe, they'd be using the term God or the divine, that there's no divine without you. And both are true, actually. There's no divine, and there's no universe without you. So, and there's science everywhere. I mentioned Greg Braden, Nassim Harriman, Lynn McTaggart, her science, Bruce Lipton, science. He's a biologist. On our Humanity Stream Plus platform, we have other scientists as well that aren't as well known. That are these others that I've mentioned are luminaries that are quite well known, but there are many scientists and philosophers like Ken Wilber, that have made it their life work to bring in this whole science or philosophy of consciousness, of oneness, of diversity and unity.
Even from most of the cultures we're coming from, I mean, we're both coming from the United States, which people would often say that that has roots in Greek philosophy and Greek thought. I mean, science and religion or spirituality or divinity, I think, is an even better word, as you were saying. But science and divinity were never not connected. They weren't separated. And yet today we look at those fields as very different. usually people who identify as a scientist would have some skepticism of someone who identifies more with a divinity quality. And likewise, often people who are more related to this aspect of divinity or religion often have some kind of deep distrust or maybe fundamental disagreements with what science is telling them. Do you have any sense of where that disconnect began? Because certainly, even in our roots, those things, again, they weren't inherently separated.
Yeah. Now this does go back to it goes back to Newton and Darwin and other scientists too, that where this, if we go back in the last couple hundred years, where the body and spirit were split, and they said, when we talk to spirit or spiritual terms, now that's the church, you know. And then we talked about the body and its physical health. Well, now that's a Western doctor. You know, we just kind of split these things. Until along came people like Einstein, who's probably the most revered scientist that's ever walked the planet. And boy, was he explicit on this. But it wasn't just Einstein. There actually are other Nobel Prize for physics leaders. Erwin Schrödinger said that there's only a oneness in the universe. Other scientists as well, Max Planck, you know, they're I won't try and list them all. On the Humanities Team website, we actually there's an initiative we created called Changing Humanity's Future that gets into all of this. And if you go to the Changing Humanity's Future page, there's a hyperlink that says sources of confirmations of a conscious reality. When you click on that link, you'll see all these quotes from scientists, these revered, well-known scientists that made it their life work, that are sharing that, you know, and again, some of this goes back into BCE, Plato and Hippocrates, that we just this it went a couple hundred years ago when we split off spirit and spiritual and the science of the body and mind, we did a great disservice. Because as you mentioned, if you were to sit down with many scientists today or many leaders of religion, they would absolutely agree with what you shared, Jason, that these are separate things. There's no putting them together. The science of this being put together is pretty undisputable. Even the Nobel Prize for Physics in last year, 2023, in October of last year, was for three researchers who researched something called entanglement. Now, entanglement, if you look up the definition of it, it means that you can have things on completely different sides of the universe, hundreds of thousands of light years apart, that are deeply affecting each other. There's no physical connection at all. That's Nobel Prize for Physics just last year. So, and that's one of the features of this deeply interconnected reality, this oneness, which is the unit, which is today's universe. What we're seeing is a lag time effect of where science is actually demonstrating and proving things, but there's a su substantial lag time before the mainstream of the world sort of catches up, comes into the awareness, and changes its the way that it lives and its habits. We compare today's world to Galileo's world. So Galileo was the scientist there in Italy in the early 1600s. He was the in the early 1600s, he was kind of the father figure of science, of physics, of astronomy. And he created a telescope based on it actually was the Dutch first created the telescope. He created his own telescope based on the Dutch and was observing the cosmos. At that time in the early 1600s, you might recall that they believed that the Earth was the center of the universe, right? And the sun and all of the stars were actually in the out in the exterior from the center, which was the Earth. Now, Galileo observed that with his research, whoa, this is not true. The Earth is actually not the center of the universe, that we are in a solar system revolving around the sun, warmed by the light of the sun. and not at the center of the universe at all. And this was very dangerous to do what he did in the early 1600s, because there was the Spanish Inquisition. We probably all remember that from growing up, the Roman Inquisition, right? What these Inquisitions were doing is where there was heresy, where you stood up with your research and went against the prevailing conventions, it was very dangerous back then. He was put under house arrest, and he was asked to recant immediately this research. And he did. He recanted to save his life, and therefore he was not killed. But he was kept under house arrest to the end of his life because of that research. Now, even though he recanted, there were other scientists then that observed the same thing, that said, wait a minute, with telescopes, the Earth is not the center of the universe. And so this one man actually changed the whole world back then in the early 1600s. Prevailing opinion, the mainstream, wanted to push against it, didn't want to look at it, didn't want to, in fact, wanted to kill the person that brought this research forward. Back through time, there are other examples like this where a science was brought forward and mainstream wanted to reject it. It's change. Change feels too substantial. Mainstream wants to reject it. Likewise, now, these articles are everywhere. And the science is everywhere, even Nobel Prize for Physics. And yet, as you mentioned, you sit many scientists down alongside many leaders of religion, and they would say these are completely separate and there's no intersection. So it takes a while. There's a lag time before people adopt this latest research. It's important. The reason we bring up the Galileo story, Jason, is because we're saying this is a Galileo moment now. We're living in a Galileo moment right now. How? How so? Well, there was a false reality that one man exposed. The Earth is not the center of the universe. Likewise, today, just to put a few different some different words around this, in today's world, we grow up. From the time we wake up on the pillow to it's the separated self is kind of the center of our universe. Me, my smaller self, what do I want to do? What do I want to focus on? What shall my career be? It's our separated self. Even though science is now sharing, there's no such, it's a fiction, just like Einstein said, it's a fiction. It's the greatest illusion in the world. The separated self isn't even true. It's not real. So, we're saying we all need to be like Galileo. There's no one person that will do today what Galileo did in the early 1600s, that kind of put it on his back and changed the whole world. Today, we all need to do our own homework, our own research, and see, oh my God, the separated self thing is a fiction, just like Einstein said. It's not even real. I've been living into a fiction. My ladder's been leaning against the wrong wall. And the beautiful thing is as we understand that fiction and understand this universal consciousness of which we are a part, and we start living into that, and that makes us, we come more into service. It's our bigger self where we see ourselves in the earth and each other. That's actually where I found it during my own journey. That's where I found this really fulfilling life that we call conscious living.
Do you think some of that, we, as you were kind of mentioning, we live in a really interesting time, and even like what we're doing right now, being able to communicate via this mode of communication, but at the same time, these things like internet, they kind of media, they can kind of give us this one world view. And then we also forget about things like relativity, which are these very scientific principles, like the theory of relativity, the theory of change, the theory of entropy, that everything does have a life cycle, that things constantly are changing. Even these ideas of entanglement, that things are connected. And many of these people, like you mentioned, Galileo, I mean, they very much were visionaries. But it's interesting because we also live in a time. I mean, I was just kind of reminded of during the pandemic, even these ideas of like consensus. consensus, and we seem to hold those views as being very, very high. And yet, you know, someone like Galileo, he was fighting against the consensus. I mean, there's something I think that's very difficult of kind of having revolutionary ideas. And even the society we live in, like we're very much focusing on a specialization, you know, which is amazing because it allows us to really create amazing things when we really have a very detailed understanding of one thing. But sometimes in that relative perspective, it's harder for us to look at the whole, which, you know, was also kind of the basis of like a liberal arts foundation, was to see things from different lenses, to put different pieces together so that we had a wider perspective. And one thing, it seems like more and more we're, you know, interestingly, although we can have a lot of perspectives, our perspective also in some sense seems to be getting narrower and narrower as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I was a liberal arts major myself in college. And as you mentioned, that's its strength, is creating these different worldviews, kind of looking with an author out at the world and in all of these different ways, which is extremely valuable. And so what we're doing here, this is kind of an extension of liberal arts, because we're saying now there's this whole new basis there's a spiritual basis here. Science, increasingly, the leading edge of science is out here with this spiritual basis. Even philosophy, you know, in the case of Ken Wilber, brings it in. And so, you know, just kind of spending the time to really do the homework, to do the research, to become aware, you know, of what is true for you. So this is what I did in the early 90s, when I had my own awakening experience. I read Neil Donald Walsh's first book called Conversations with God, Book One, came out in 1995. And that was the thing that first opened that door for me, that brought in these things that we're talking about, that I'm calling conscious living. And I didn't accept it right as I was reading the book. I was intrigued by it. But to go and live a whole different life, you know, boy, you're going to have to put a little time into your research, your homework, right? If you're going to change your whole life to reflect a different reality, you're going to spend some quality time really looking at that, what these mystics share, these scientists, philosophy. You're going to educate yourself. So this is what I did for some number of years there in the mid-90s. And then there did come a day. I remember that day, and I remember that moment where I was sitting in my townhouse there in Marin County in Northern California. And I said, okay, I've now really done the work. I've looked into this, and now I've got to plant my feet in my reality. So is my reality the one I grew up in, where Alinda is my mom's name, Joe is my dad, where I'm going to continue living my life with this understanding that I'm really Linda and Joe's son? I've got one body that is, which will define myself, Steve Farrell, for the lifetime that I live. And then I'm going to go to dust 5 feet under. Or did my parents just deliver me to the earth? Did I actually come from the one, from the Most High? Where I have those same properties of everlasting life, where I've had hundreds of lives before. Where this particular life is just a chapter, and where I have those same properties, if I can become who I am destined to become, bigger than the middle kid, you know, in a big family, in a little home with a divorced mom. So who am I? And that was the decision I made that night, where I said, okay, I'm the second one. My parents just delivered me to the earth. But I came from the Most High. And once I put that solid ground under my feet, then my whole life changed. That was when I decided I sold these companies. I left the business associations. I left Silicon Valley. I got to know Neil Donald Walsh. I launched Humanities Team with him. And then we created this whole platform for conscious living that supports people that are living consciously all over the world. So, and this is where everybody's got to make that decision for themselves. It's a huge decision. You know, it's a self-definition decision. Ultimately, it becomes a self-realization decision because life is really about becoming self-realized, where we say, what does that mean? You know, so Steve, for you, what does it mean to be self-realized? Where I have to sit with that and I have to decide. And that's what I'm going to grow into. So that moment in that townhouse there in Northern California was a huge moment. That's when everything shifted for me.
What do you think it was specifically about that book? I mean, because again, you mentioned the book Conversations with God, and then obviously you become very close with Neil Donald Walsh. What do you think it was about that book, that writing? Was it a moment in your life that you were ripe for it, or do you think there was a specific message in that book that really resonated with you? And I mean, what do you think it was about that particular text? Because I'm sure you had read other things, other kind of spiritual books, or you'd heard of different practices, but do you have a sense of like what specifically about that kind of was one of the things that began to spark this awakening within you?
I do, yeah. So, Jason, my whole life, even though I mentioned I was an altar boy in the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church wasn't as loving and compassionate then as it is today under Pope Francis, but I was in touch, you know, even as a young child, from the time I grew up with this, I at some level I knew that there was not a judging deity, you know, where I was being judged and that I was gonna, at the end of my life, kind of stand in front and then you're gonna go in this direction or that direction. I did not have any sense of that at all. I, on the contrary, I had a sense that there was just this amazingly loving, you know, I'll use the term God. That had my back, you know, that was supporting me and growing and my life unfolding to a higher and more mature self. And so when I read the words from Conversations with God, which as you know, matches with that understanding that this is what is revealed, is that this whole notion that there's a judging, punishing deity, you know, it's rubbish. It's just not real. Mystics, again, have shared this down through the ages as I went and did my homework after Conversations with God. As you know, mystical traditions have been sharing this back over millennia, that it's a God of pure love, that we all go to that same destination of pure love, and life is we're growing into our higher and higher selves. It's a journey to self-realization. So the words match to the understanding that I had. And everything that's there impressed me as just being true. And it wasn't just me. You might remember back in the 90s when those books were big. Neil was on ABC and NBC and CBS and CNN and all the shows. And almost everybody had the book on their night bookstand. The book was on the New York Times bestseller list for 137 weeks. That's a long time. So people were amazed at the wisdom because, you know, if you know Neil's story, he was a homeless man, right, eating out of trash cans when he then had his first conversations with God that was to be continued, where this wisdom then came through. So the wisdom, I think, is pretty irrefutable. Why would so many people read it? Why was he so popular on television and so on? I think because people would read the wisdom and go, wow, this is, you know, amazing. And you had trouble punching holes in this wisdom. It just all seemed so pure and so true. So the way I looked at it, Jason, is doesn't it make sense that in today's world where there are all these challenges going on, right, which I've talked about, that the God of our understanding would decide to have one big, huge global conversation that everybody could read into that answers the biggest questions in life. Who am I? Where did I come from? Why am I here? What can my journey be about if I want to be truly fulfilled? All of these questions are answered in the Conversations with God books. And again, when you look out at this other wisdom, mystical tradition, science, etc., it actually all affirms that very same wisdom. In fact, there's very little in Conversations with God that's brand new that was not shared before. It's just that it was distilled down into wisdom that is so easy to read, so simple to understand, that you really can't get lost in it. So I still look at it that way today. I mentioned, as we know, we probably have friends and family members that feel weary, alone, disempowered, anxious, some even in depression. What our perspective is there's a remedy right here, right now, that addresses all of it. It's why we call it the Galileo moment, is if we really understand this wisdom, come into this awareness, and then we start living into this awareness, make it our life, we don't feel those things anymore. Lonely, disempowered, anxious, depressed, weary. We don't feel those things. Just the opposite. What I call conscious living is it's like living on a raft where you're floating above all of the roller coaster of life, you know, where it's, oh, today's a bad day, today's a good day, kind of the roller coaster, which is how I grew up. And this conscious living thing, even though I have challenges just as everybody else does, it's more like I'm floating on a raft above that whole roller coaster. I'm not in this, I don't have bad days. That's not what I experience. The Conversations with God wisdom, as it brings you into this notion that you're a son or a daughter of the Most High, just to reduce the message all the way down, and that you're here to participate in this great pivot or this great shift of the ages that's happening on the planet right now, that we're calling this great migration to conscious living. It's a beautiful thing. Living into it is life-changing. Living into it is fulfilling. So, yes, the book was very profound for me. I think it was very profound for a lot of people. Maybe the difference is I didn't just read the book and put it down. That began an inquiry for me that has extended all the way to today. I never did put that wisdom down.
What do you think is that balance? You mentioned something really interesting, which is like at a certain moment you realize that like your parents birthed you, but in a way you didn't come from your parents. You came from God, from divinity. And I think that's something a lot of people struggle with is kind of, you know, even you mentioned like Neil Donald Walsh, his story was kind of living as a homeless man, just completely on his own. And I think there's often these two conflicting things within people, which is on the one hand, wanting to be free, wanting to have no attachments. So like even kind of your story, like renouncing your work, moving to a completely different place, like this idea of freedom, versus this sense of obligation that a lot of people feel to their work, to their family, and then even to what some people would say is kind of this beauty or power of tradition of really standing in something that's rooted, that kind of tethers us down, and I think a lot of people feel a conflict between these two sides, like wanting to be free, wanting to leave everything, wanting to renounce, wanting to become a monk, and yet at the same time feeling drawn or compelled to be with family, but also finding, you know, maybe this idea of maybe there is a deep wisdom in my tradition or my ways or my place or my roots, and you know, kind of finding that way of walking in between those two places.
I think you've articulated it well, that that is precisely the challenge that people feel confronts them. So for me, this is more of a spiritual thing than a religious thing. It was not a Catholic, born of the Catholic Church. It's a spiritual thing. And the beauty in the spiritual thing is you can actually have it all. You can have everything that you just shared there, Jason. Complete and total freedom. The prioritization of your time, however you might want to prioritize it. All that we're doing when we trust the spirituality and step into it is we're, instead of resisting, what I call cognitive dissonance. We're more going with the flow of, we all have that still small voice within us, which we call that our soul's calling in humanity's team. We all do. It's what led you to the person, your partner. It led you to the work that you're doing. So in this, where we're following this spirituality, we pay close and close attention to that still small voice. And we don't let the worldly noise distract us. Part of the reason I wrote this book called A New Universal Dream is I wanted to share of the 50-year, my 50-year journey, where people that love me dearly, my brothers and sisters, on a number of occasions said, "Don't do that. That is a huge mistake if you go do that." And I trusted my inner voice, and I did what was led to do. I had complete freedom, but I was choosing to follow that still small voice. To, as this kid that was a middle kid that grew up with next to nothing, and then I start these businesses that take off and do quite well, and I learned things about myself and that, and then I left, and then I, with these partners and colleagues I have all over the world in humanities team, created this streaming platform with conscious education. That was all being led, where I moved aside any resistance or any cognitive dissonance. I went with the flow. I listened to that still small voice. I trusted that still small voice. And where you do that, what I can promise you, and every viewer here, is that where you're given vision, I'll call it, from the still small voice, you're always given provision, which is to say you can trust that voice. It will lead you into good places. So I'm married, happily married, 26 years. I have two kids adopted at birth with my wife. This still small voice has led me to a beautiful place with my wife and with my kids and humanities team, what I'm with my partners and colleagues and people all over the world that I'm in conversation with. It's taken care of all parts of my life. And I've had total freedom. I was never asked to do anything that would hurt any part of my life. Just the opposite. It nurtured and supported all parts of my life. Now, there have been many challenging moments, of course. There always are, where we trust anything, including our still small voice. There were many years for humanities team where we were formative and it was very challenging. It was. But I trusted it. I trusted the journey and where it would take me. And this is what I would say to your viewers is, boy, we are all one. So trust this, your own inner voice. This podcast is about our inner universe. It's our interior world. It's so trusting that interior world, trust where that voice is taking you, where it's giving you vision to something that it wants to lead you to. I trust it and follow it and notice how you're going to be supported on all levels. Where I would have gotten into trouble, I had a family member fly out about 20, 21, 22 years ago that was really trying to talk me out of this whole thing because he loved me so dearly. And I mean, my God, if I hadn't trusted the voice and become who I am today, it would have been my loss in a huge way. And I would say this is true for everybody that's watching and listening here now, is too often I'll be speaking and somebody will share after I speak, I've had that, I've been inclined to kind of do the same thing and I have taken a few steps out, but I haven't gone further because I'm not sure it'll work out for me. I'm not sure it'll work out for my family. Because again, I think you articulated it just right, Jason, where the people feel this, am I going to lose my freedom? Am I going to give up something? Am I going to be taken somewhere that isn't going to serve me? To which I would say, no, if you trust it, if you follow that inner voice, you will be protected and guided. It's like a GPS system, a God protection system. So I would say just the opposite, and you'll be taken care of in the most amazing way.
You spoke about some like daily practices or techniques, or is there anything that comes to mind that you found to be very effective of how to cultivate some of these things like love, compassion, presence, awareness, kind of this idea of living more consciously.
So yeah, let me share a few things here. First, some wisdom. This wisdom comes from conversations with God. So the first threesome is awareness, honesty, and responsibility. So as just as functions for how we live our life, where because we both talked about how awareness can actually be, we can be off with our awareness, just like Einstein said, greatest illusion in the world, right? So where we're really paying, we're really paying close attention with our awareness to ourselves and the world around us to be led to what is ultimate reality. So, and then responsibility. As we come into these higher understandings, to this higher consciousness, to be responsible. And then the third one, awareness, or I mentioned, I missed honesty in there before responsibility. So awareness, honesty is where we just stay in the truth as we're on this journey, and then responsibility, where we become responsibility, where we become responsible. The next threesome is focusing on living deliberately. So where we're really choosing deliberately. The second thing is living harmoniously. So where we're in harmony with others in the world around us. And the third one is beneficially. So that's deliberately, harmoniously, and beneficially that follow awareness, honesty, and responsibility. Write those six things down. Where you really live your life that way, you are gonna, this is this journey that our inner voice, our soul's calling will lead us to, where we're living our lives this way. And it's not that our lives are going to be perfect or excellent all the time, because we're human, and we're still going to make mistakes. But where these things anchor us, we're gonna go to a really good place. We're going to make, by and large, really wise decisions, but really mature decisions. And this whole living a flourishing life thing can happen real well. Now, you asked, though, about daily practice. So let me bring that in, too. The daily practice is the thing, of course, that really anchors us hugely every day. This has really changed for me over the 20 years. It's been quite different in terms of things that I've focused on. In the early years, it was more just really feeling this whole loving God, God of my understanding, really feeling that, being warmed by the light of the divine, I would say. Today, where my daily practice is it's very metaphysical. So this is metaphysics, intention and metaphysics are huge in this world of that we call conscious living. So intention, of course, is like the rudder on a boat, right? It's what steers you. You wake up every day. I'm going in this direction, going, living into this higher purpose. That's the rudder on your boat is intention. Metaphysics is where we're this dream for the world that mystics have shared, also shared in conversations with God, that we're going to awaken to this new science of oneness, that we're gonna the conscious living is going to be made pervasive worldwide. By 2040, this was the download we got. That's in 16 years. And that the new spirituality would emerge on the earth. The new spirituality is where we're in connection or communion with the divine, each other, the earth, and all of life. So my daily practice now is metaphysical, where I am going out into a future where these things are already created on the earth. And where we're experiencing them on the earth, and we're not any longer experiencing this weary separation, anxiety, depression, disempowerment thing. We've left that. We've gone to what, why I believe we were all born into these lives, was to not live lives like that, but to live lives where there's a communal experience. It's the divine presence experience. It's the love of our family. It's where there's no such thing as transactional anymore. We don't live transactionally anymore, or even relationally. We live out beyond that. So that's what my daily practice is, and that's the energy then that I carry with me throughout my day.
So recently you released a book. Can you speak a little bit about that? A New Universal Dream. It's interesting because also one of the words that the universe is in this podcast, and also I do a lot of work with dreams, so I think it's also a very interesting title. But what inspired you to write that, and what I mean, I know always summarizing a book is quite challenging, but how would you describe what's being conveyed in that book?
The key premise is that, again, I like I believe all of us, when we left our home, I was out in search of adventure and discovery and treasure, if you will, treasure being, the good life, right? And I was led then to conscious living, as I believe many people on the Earth are today. I mentioned that I think this great migration to conscious living has already begun, that we're actually well into it. There are many people conscious all over the world now, the way we're discussing it. And but it's a journey that does have challenges. There were many for me, as you might imagine, going from the middle kid, little home, moving out to San Francisco by myself, starting these businesses, growing the businesses, leaving the businesses, starting humanities team. There were many times when I was very challenged and I really didn't know what to do. And I had to feel my way through to the decision that I would make that would allow me to unfold or grow into this next version of myself. And so I wrote the book to tell that story. And my sister, well, I've got, again, a large family. One of my sisters said, "Steve, you're nice to everybody in the book except for yourself." And so, because I am truthful about myself, I was challenged, many times on this journey. And I stop in the book and I say, "Oh my, this was my challenge. This is what was happening. And this is what I did. And these are, and I actually start talking to the reader throughout the book and I say, "And you can make this decision too. You can. This is a way you can be supported on the conscious journey when you make a similar decision." So I wrote the book really more for the reader than for me. It's not that anybody needs to know me in particular, or my particular journey, but my journey has become a tool. I've made it a tool by writing the book for others on the conscious journey, where they can read it and go, "Oh my God, I've run it, had those same things happen." And then how I learned from it, how I grew through it, and how I then grew into this person that I've become and I'm still becoming. And it's where I stop resisting. I'm more living into the flow. I'm accepting that light of God, that love of God, with that I see in others, and where I know that everybody's always trying their best, giving people the benefit of the doubt. They're always trying their best. So that's the story. It also is the story of Humanities Team, and I mentioned, with Neil Donald Walsh, we started it 20 years ago. So you'll follow it all the way through where we're meeting with Archbishop Desmond Tutu and other leaders that we gave our spiritual leadership award to over the years, and all of these different things that we've done that have allowed us to grow into today. We're the largest global nonprofit in transformational education with our streaming platform called Humanity Stream Plus. So I tell that whole story in the hopes that I'm offering a few tools to support people on this journey. That is, I believe it's the, I believe 20 years from now, we'll look back and we'll call this the age of consciousness, where we're going through this whole elevated consciousness exercise that Einstein talked about so many years ago. And hopefully this book can just be a tool for people that are on this journey, because I believe we're all on the journey right now.
Can you speak a bit more about this the streaming platform that you created? What do you offer there, and who's that for, and what are you trying to convey, and maybe kind of the topics that you're covering, and what people can look for?
You bet. Very exciting for me. We were led in this whole, I talk about vision and provision. So we were led ourselves and humanities team to go into education, transformational education, and then shortly after that, we were led to create a streaming platform. And even though we're a nonprofit, there are big for-profits around us. We actually have the most advanced streaming platform in the whole world because all the devices, your iPhone, your Android, your notepad, television, all the devices can download these programs, and they're on all the services. So Apple TV, Google Pay, Roku, all the services. So, and we're right now the only one in transformational education that offers all of those services across all those devices. Now, we're a nonprofit. So our North Star is not like in Silicon Valley, where it's all about getting growth top line and bottom line. We have the opposite, get the price down, 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 get it down, because we want to get it. There right now are over 175 of these master classes and transformational education programs on the streaming platform. We're translating in 75 languages all of our new programs. That's a first also in the industry. Our dream is for this to be in all of the homes all over the world, because what you and I are talking about here, Jason, we think there's no more important conversation in the whole world than conscious living. Because we can, again, in the outer world, we can see what those challenges are. And we're saying in humanities team, there's a remedy. It's right here, right now, to all of those individual and collective challenges. And it's conscious living. And there's no one, for me, it was conversations with God. For others, it's Greg Braden. It's Nassim Harriman. It's Bruce Lipton. It's Michael Beckwith. There are many, many different teachings that take us to this, what I'm calling conscious living mountaintop. We have identified who we believe are the top leaders in the space, covering, for example, Wayne Dyer's daughters, Sage Dyer and Serena Dyer, who created a program with us called Life After Death, where they tell this amazing, jaw-dropping story that won't even sound real here. But go look at it. There's a free program with them on our website. Go check it out, Life After Death, where they talk about how their dad, Wayne, is operating in today's world still. Wayne Dyer is actually present in today's world. Now, that's a lot to believe, but don't take it from me. Go watch the program, listen to his daughters, and the Karen Noe, who's the medium that they worked with and are working with even today. Many others, Thomas Huble, Michael Beckwith, Neil Donald Walsh, Ken Wilber, Conscious Business 9-month program, many, many transformational education programs. I mentioned Len McTaggart and Bruce Lipton. So what we've done is collected up and created with them original master classes in many cases, and so that people can go through our library, which is amazing. The visual quality too is like right there with an Amazon or a Netflix, the same visual quality. It's stunning. So on my iPhone, which I don't have it right here in front of me, so I can't lift it up and show it to you, but I was just on a trip. And so on the plane, and when I was sitting outside, on my iPhone, I'll watch these video trainings, which are amazing. I don't have to sit in front of my computer. I also use Roku, so in my master bedroom, we'll watch from our television. But these things that we're talking about, where somebody's just listening to us, it's a lot to take in and believe. I spent years and these. Faculty also, they've spent lifetimes creating their wisdom, their video trainings. And instead of watching mindless television shows or movies, and sure, everybody's going to make time for those, but how about we create some little splice of time for training in these areas that I'm discussing, where we can truly grow into the fullness of our destiny, which is why we were all born onto the earth. So that's what we're about, is creating embodied practices, science-based practices, spiritual practices, philosophy, conscious business, on and on with these leaders from all over the world that will take you there in their own way. We also, by the way, have a one-for-one program because we're a nonprofit. So every paid subscription creates a free subscription for an underserved, underprivileged individual somewhere in the world, which is kind of neat. So even though the price is right now it's $2.99 a year for the subscription platform with 175 programs, it's also free. We give it away to people that can't afford it at all, mostly outside of this country.
Well, wonderful, Steve. I know we're coming up on our time limit. Is there anything you'd like to address that we haven't that you'd like to touch on before we call a close to this?
So I'll just say what's most important to me is the whole spiritual opening of our heart. And so if in this program is about our interior, so just to the extent that it feels right and feels true, opening to your own in your own daily practice, these things that we've discussed, that you're actually a daughter or a son of the Most High, opening to that, asking that question, and then coming under that influence, following that still small voice. There's nothing more important than that. So now, in terms of things, to if you wanted to be in touch with me or Humanities Team, Humanities Team are 501c3 nonprofit. It's spelled with a Y, Humanities Team with a Y dot org. And you can also go to humanitystream.net for the streaming platform. And the book, you can go to anewuniversaldream.com. And the first chapters of the book are opened up for free. And then if you do buy the book from Amazon or a bookstore, if you enter your receipt number there on the site, we give you one of my master classes on conscious leadership. It's a $299 master class. We give it away for free. All you have to do is enter your receipt number. So if you do buy the book, be sure to enter that receipt number so you can go through that program. It's pretty special.
Well, great, Steve. Well, thank you so much for sharing. We're at 1 hour 11 minutes, which is a good number. But
We'll love
I'll
the
put a link
book.
to those in the show notes, and yeah, there's a copy. And yeah, thank you so much for coming
Yeah,
on.
awesome.
And I'll put a link to those in the show notes. And I appreciate your time and the work you're doing of kind of spreading the good word. And I really wish you all the best.
Yeah, Jason, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Steve. It was a pleasure for me to sit down with him. I think he's doing some really beautiful work, creating these projects to bring these ideas of consciousness, of different ideas of science, and kind of the connection of these two fields out into the general public. So I really appreciate that kind of work, and I think someone like him is a really good person to begin to do that. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation. As always, if you're able to support this podcast, that's a really big help to me. Patreon is a really good option. It's a website. You can sign up for as little as $1 a month. There's different tiers that you can sign up for. Those tiers give you different things back, things like early access to shows, bonus materials, Q&As. To all the people doing that, to all the patrons, as always, thank you very much for your support. I really appreciate it. It's really what allows me to continue making these episodes. And if you feel like you're gaining really anything from these episodes, that's a really beautiful way to give back and also to practice this idea of reciprocity. If you're not able to do that, as always, helping with the algorithms to get the show out to a bigger audience is really useful. So if you're viewing this on YouTube or Rumble, hitting the subscribe button, turning on the notification bell, liking the video, leaving any questions or comments in the comment section, all of those things really help. And if you're listening to this on whatever platform, but especially Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leaving a starred rating and a short review is also a really big help. So that's it. I'm not exactly sure of my upcoming guests. I'd like to have my friend friend Jeanette on. She also lives here in Peru to speak about some of the commonalities, the interplay between Buddhism and plant medicine. So I hope to have her on soon. Other than that, there's a few other people I'd like to bring on, but I'm shooting a number of these quite far in advance, so it's a bit far in the future, so I still don't have any specific dates. But as always, I hope to continue to bring on some fascinating guests. So I hope this finds you all well. Thank you all for tuning in. Again, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, I will see you all on the next episode.
Tunga.